It's time for our weekly chat with National Party MP Christopher Luxon.
National Party MP Christopher Luxon and Barbara Kruninger have had a petition aiming to revise the government's water service bill ignored in Parliament. Noah spoke to Christopher Luxon about the petition as part of their weekly catch-up and how he feels the government is letting down rural New Zealanders. They also discussed Auckland's move to level 3, potential vaccine mandates in a world where we might live with COVID, and why National isn't currently appealing to younger voters. Noah started, though, by asking Christopher Luxon what he opposed about the government's water service bill.
We're on board with much of it. You know, we think it's actually a good bill, and we've worked really hard to try and make it a better bill through that select committee process. But the one bit that we wanted to make changes to was just to say, look, if you happen to be someone who's got a holiday house and you share a bore with a neighbour, if you happen to be a farmer and you might have your house, your parents' house, and two or three workers' house on your property, you are now, if you are a marae and you get your own water supply from a bore or from a spring or from roof water, you are now called a water supplier. And as a result, you have to meet the obligations as if you were, you know, very much like city councils have to meet the obligations for providing water. And the problem with all of that is that there's up to 70,000 small water suppliers. So a lot of people have holiday homes, they share a bore with a neighbour, they're now called a water supplier, and they've got to put a water management plan together, they've got to register, they've got to do a whole bunch of things. Our hope is that those things aren't as onerous as what they're asking district councils to do, and that's something that, you know, the bill will try and deal with. But fundamentally, we're saying, look, if you're a farmer in New Zealand in particular, and you've got, you know, five buildings that you provide water to through your water scheme or your water arrangements on your farm, then why on earth would you be expected to be registering as a water supplier at that point with all of those unnecessary onerous sort of burden and regulation on top of you? And so 15,000 people in a short period of time, while COVID's been going on and a whole bunch of other issues, have actually said this issue matters to me, and have actually signed a petition to say we support that as well.
I want to talk a little bit about Auckland's move to level 3. Judith Collins has said the government should rule out ever using level 4 again for this outbreak, as the government no longer has the mandate to keep people locked down. Do you agree with that? Do you think
Well, I think, you know, if you hear the Prime Minister talking yesterday, she was admitting that we probably wouldn't be wanting to go back to level 4 lockdowns either in her stand-up. But look, the bottom line is this, you know, we're in a hell of a mess and we're in these lockdowns, and there's no other simpler way to say it because, as we've talked before, we didn't get organised on the vaccinations. You know, our Prime Minister didn't pick up the phone and talk to the CEOs of Pfizer as other Prime Ministers were all around the world. Or if she did, it was way too late. And we ordered late, we received late. We weren't aggressive or assertive enough of acting in New Zealand's interests to get the vaccination done sooner, faster. We wouldn't be in this situation if we'd been at 75, 80% vaccination back in April or May.
Do you think employers should be given the right to refuse to hire or fire unvaccinated people? Because a lot of the strategy now seems to be we want to get vaccinated instead of having to rely on lockdowns. How much should vaccines be forced upon people?
Well, look, I think our broad position is, and it's a very challenging issue, is that ultimately that's a matter for employers, basically. And what you've got to understand, Noah, is for every employer in this country, there are a series of obligations under WorkSafe or under health and safety legislation, which vaccination falls under. And there's some tests and some things that people have to do to be able to do that. So, you know, that's really the position, and that will ultimately be tested in the courts. And that there's some court cases going through. There's one court case I'm aware of with a customs employee who refused to get vaccinated, and that's going through the courts as well. So really, that's what we need to do, is be able to say, look, it's a matter for each individual employer. They need to make a risk-based assessment. There is really good criteria and obligations that they have to work towards under WorkSafe and health and safety legislation. And then it needs to be worked out from there.
Well, if it's the responsibility of the individual employer, is there a risk then that not enough people are going to get vaccinated? Is there any use in the government? Because if you're talking about how it's going to the courts, could the government potentially change some laws to help employers enforce vaccinations?
Well, that's something the government will have to think through. But bottom line is we do have well-established processes for business dealing with these kinds of issues. Or there is a mechanism, which is health and safety legislation. There's also, and how that fits alongside the Bill of Rights, that's what the legal cases will probably be about. But that's how normally things are established in this country. You know, we think about our industrial relations law. We don't just sit in Wellington passing law. That's been built up through case law and through precedents and those sorts of things. And so it is difficult for employers, though, right? Because their issues are their employees may not want to be sitting beside someone who's unvaccinated. The unvaccinated may feel feeling unfairly targeted. Equally, people serving customers, their customers don't want to be have you come into their business if you're not vaccinated. So there's a whole bunch of very challenging circumstances. But ultimately, it's a decision for each employer to make, and it's basically for them to work through their obligations as it is listed there under the Health and Safety and WorkSafe websites.
Last week, we spoke a little bit about the latest polls around National, and some other details around those polls came out on Friday morning last week, so we didn't get the chance to speak about them then. One of the most notable parts of that other information was that National has only around 15% support in voters aged under 40. Is that a concern to you?
Well, look, I mean, as we've talked before, we've got a lot of work to do in the National Party, and I spoke about it on the weekend and on the Q&A interview with Jack Tame as well. But, and the reality is we've got work to do to rebuild trust and relevancy with a whole bunch of people. And really that comes down to saying there is nothing wrong with our centre-right politics or principles, because we see very successful centre-right governments all around the world. But what there is a challenge for us is to link our messages to those principles and make them relevant for where people are today. And that's the same whether it's young people, whether it's...
Why do you think young people, National is a lot less support amongst young people than across New Zealand as a whole?
Well, historically, centre-right parties in general around the world tend to have less support from young people.
Why do you think that is?
I think in many ways, it's because it's very interesting. The data starts shifting as soon as someone starts getting a job, start having to pay taxes, start having to buy a house, and that's when they tend to move across to the National Party, say. We see that happen a lot in the mid to late 20s. And so I don't know why it is. I think it's increasing responsibilities that you end up having as an individual, and therefore you have a more invested stake in it. You know, if you think about it, you buy your first house. Although that's a challenge in this day and age, but if you can buy your own house, you're invested in that community. You care a lot about that local school. You care about the services you're getting into that community. And as a result, you take a bigger interest and you become more attuned to how the system kind of works and what's needed to do. So over time, as people age, they have historically become more attractive or more attracted to centre-right politics and principles.
This was under 40s, though. So I would definitely agree with you, particularly when people are at uni and things, they're pretty left-wing, and then that sort of shifts over time. But generally, I feel like that shift happens. The shift doesn't happen when you're 40. I think it is more 25 or 30. Why do you think under 40s who aren't?
Well, that's the work that we have to do, you know, because, yeah, that is definitely the work that we have to do, is that, you know, fundamentally, when we're talking to those people, they want us to come to them with policies and plans that actually is about how they improve their incomes. It's actually making sure that their kids can get a world-class education. It means that we've got to find a way to build language and have the right language, but build infrastructure that actually improves their daily life, doing the school drop-off or the school, you know, run and getting to work. It is things like mental health, you know, people access to mental health services. These are things that are mattering a lot to that group of people that we need to be able to talk to and to speak to really well. We need to talk about safe communities. We need to talk about tackling inequality. We need to talk a lot about sustainability. And that work is, as I said on the weekend, isn't any different. And it's a normal pattern of political life, is that if you think about the work that Tony Blair with the Labour Party did, who were unelectable for such a long period of time, had to reinvent and reconnect with people. David Cameron did it with the Conservatives, Stephen Harper with the Canadians, Conservatives. We did it here in the National Party ourselves. The Labor Party's done it themselves here in New Zealand. And that's just a natural product and process that we're working through now.
Often that reinvention does involve a bit of a change in personnel, because someone like Judith Collins has been in the National Party for quite a long time. If you think about Jacinda Ardern, she was like a completely different face sort of out of nowhere when she came to lead the Labour Party. Does that reinvention or sort of redefining yourself to the public also involve changing people?
Well, my bigger point is, I know at the moment, look, everyone wants to do a very tactical pile on the National Party about our performance today. But people forget history and the arc of history and how political parties and how political beliefs and principles are articulated and reinvented over time. It's natural, right? If you think about the broad arc of history and you think about sort of the steps forward and the steps back and how political parties evolve and re-express their core values for the times that they're in, that's a very normal process. And that's the work that we're going on. And what I'd say to you is that's actually the work of all our party, our members, our supporters, all of our MPs, our party organisation, not just the leader.
And does it involve at some point some change in people, though, or is it purely
the bigger issue is getting very clear about what each political party stands for and making sure it's re-expressed and relevant for the times that it faces.
That was National Party MP Christopher Luxon. You're listening to The Wire on 95 BFM.